Even in circumstances in which NGOs initially allocate participatory aid neutrally, a neutral benefit realization is an exceptional outcome rather than a guaranteed one.
Welcome to Vox Dev Talks. My name is Tim Phillips. Should the community have a greater say in determining how aid is spent? So-called participatory development aid has the goal of making sure that governments can't misuse aid to buy approval. It's an important idea, but Kate Baldwin of Yale is one of the authors of a study that demonstrates, spoiler alert, that it may be much more complicated in practice than it sounds. She joins me now. Kate, welcome to Vox Dev Talks.
Hi, Tim.
Are there real-world examples of how political insiders and government supporters benefit from aid being funneled to them?
Obviously, donors are often very concerned about examples of corruption, so where aid is stolen by incumbent political leaders and government officials for their own benefit. Mm-hmm. But there are also reasons to be concerned about political bias and the allocation of aid among the population more generally. So, for example, the ruling party ZANU-PF in Zimbabwe has frequently been accused of denying opposition party supporters food aid during the past two decades. Closer to the context we studied in our paper, Ghana's incumbent government targeted a donor-funded electrification project at its political strongholds just before the 2000 election. So there are examples.
Aid donors really don't want this to happen, and they try to stop it happening. So how does it happen?
There are a variety of ways it can happen. So political leaders might be able to influence the allocation of aids fairly directly. For example, if political appointees in the bureaucracy are the ones who decide upon the communities in which a donor-funded project will be based. But they could also influence it more indirectly, for example, by deciding how to allocate roads or other infrastructure that are necessary for donors and NGOs to get access to communities.
Is the main problem here that this misallocation, it hurts particular individuals or groups, or is there also a threat to the legitimacy of aid in general?
Certainly, political biases in the allocation of aid can result in the first problem, where aid is not being allocated to the places where it will have the greatest effect in reducing poverty and improving development indicators. Mm-hmm. Whether it also influences the legitimacy of aid and public opinion about aid in both donor and recipient countries, I think, is an open research question, but it is certainly a possibility.
So we have NGOs, quite a lot of them these days, non-governmental organizations. And I would have thought the clue is in the way that they're named. Theoretically, they could eliminate this bias because they're not from a government and they distribute aid. Does it eliminate this bias?
Yeah, I mean, as you sort of alluded to in the way you phrased the question, the term NGO encompasses a very diverse set of organizations, any organization that is not the state. And some of them may not be very independent from political leaders. They could be set up by politicians or their family members. On the other hand, there are some that have the goal of operating autonomously from the government and from political parties. And obviously, we would have greater hope that the latter kind of NGO could eliminate partisan bias in aid beneficiaries. But even in cases in which NGOs allocate aid inputs neutrally across party lines, the benefits from aid may not be neutrally realized. And that's one of the key points we want to make in this paper. So the benefits realized from development projects depend not just on NGO investment, but also how this investment interacts with citizens' and governments' contributions to complementary and substitute projects. If citizens contribute differently depending on their own partisanship, or governments invest differently depending on the partisanship of communities, this can generate partisan bias in the realization of aid benefits, even if the aid is neutrally allocated by the NGO initiating the project.
I can start to imagine how this gets complicated right away. We are, however, discussing another way of doing this, participatory development. Tell me, what does participatory mean in this context?
The term participatory development, more generally, it's an umbrella term for projects that involve community members in the design and management of development projects. So the idea is that community members should be involved in project decision-making and oversight to help align projects with community needs, but also to provide on-the-ground monitoring and to reduce dependence on outside resources.
And if you're going to have participatory institutions that are helping to decide what to do about this, in the theory of this, what impacts do these institutions have? Are they always a positive influence on how aid is distributed?
In theory, participatory development may improve the implementation of specific projects by increasing community inputs into the process. But in addition, advocates of participatory development hope this type of programming can have wider benefits by generating participatory skills, social capital, new institutions that subsequently improve governance of activities beyond the initial project. So, for example, advocates hope that the programming might subsequently result in more political participation by community members, and therefore this might generate greater incentives for politicians to make public investment in programming communities, and this might create much longer-term socioeconomic benefits. However, the story of participatory development isn't always positive. Sometimes participatory development projects fail to create more inclusive or participatory governance institutions due to elite capture. Oftentimes, participatory development projects don't have success in generating leadership skills that translate beyond the administration of the initial project, even if that project is deemed a success. Our study is interesting because we study a project that was effective in generating new inclusive participatory institutions. And it was successful in mobilizing greater political participation for a subset of participants. However, the story still isn't ultimately a very positive one, as we'll discuss.
Let us discuss this particular project. It's a participatory development program that took place in Ghana. So when does this story begin?
We study a randomized controlled trial of a participatory development project that began in 2007.
And how large was this program?
So the trial offered participatory development programming to approximately half of 97 village groupings, each containing about 10,000 people.
That's pretty big when it all begins. The existing local institutions, how much of a say did they have in how aid was distributed? And what were they, I guess?
Prior to the programming, there were two sets of institutions involved in governing the distribution of public goods more generally within these communities. So first, there are district governments. So each grouping of villages has and had an elected representative in the district assemblies. District governments in Ghana were reorganized in the late 1980s, and they were well established by the start of our study, although an enduring issue is how much influence the elected assembly members have over the district government budgets and activities, as opposed to the district chief executives who are appointed by the president. In addition to the district governments, there are traditional chieftaincy institutions, and each village in particular is led by a village chief who is usually selected from within the village's ruling family and typically rules for almost life. These governance structures often date back to the pre-colonial era, and village chiefs can play a critical role in organizing community contributions to local projects, but they do this without formal salaries or formal budgets. They instead depend on voluntary contributions from community members to accomplish projects.
So, Kays, in the villages that were part of this trial, what new participatory institutions did you create?
The NGO running the participatory development programming, the Hunger Project, begins its engagement with communities by running what it calls a vision, commitment, and action workshop, in which interested community members can receive training in civic engagement and development planning. Following this initial workshop, the community is asked to elect committee members to oversee the Hunger Project's programming activities. So community members elect one executive committee, and then they also elect sector-specific subcommittees for each area of programming in which the Hunger Project engages, which are food security, education, health and sanitation, microcredit, and income generation. In addition, the NGO designates community members with particularly strong leadership skills as animators who are then asked to help mobilize other community members to participate in the projects. And the goal is to create new leadership structures that are more inclusive than existing ones. And what's interesting is that our evidence shows that the leaders on these committees were, on many dimensions, more diverse than existing political and traditional leaders in the study communities. So they were younger, they were less affluent, but also more educated than pre-existing leaders.
Yes. Now, to evaluate how well these institutions are working, I guess you have to capture whether they are creating these energy, this mobilization effect that you spoke about, or whether there are those negative effects going on. So what are you looking out for? I imagine this is not the easiest thing to measure.
So we begin by explicitly assessing the effects of participatory development on participation, accountability, and investment in local public goods through the pre-existing governance institutions, which were the village-level traditional institutions and district governments. And we want to do this so we can examine the full effects of participatory development on resource mobilization within communities. So we're interested in whether the experience of participatory development encouraged greater citizen participation in other institutions, whether it was more effective in making the leadership of these institutions more accountable, and whether this ultimately resulted in more investment in local public goods from these institutions. That would be the best case scenario. And we use a variety of data sources to measure these outcomes, including household surveys, administrative records from the electoral commissions, surveys of district assembly members, and community surveys. And so specifically, we assess whether the programming increased involvement in community meetings, perceptions of the village chief's accountability and household contributions to public goods through retrospective questions on a household survey. Mm-hmm. We assess whether the programming increased turnout and candidacy in district elections through administrative records from the Electoral Commission. We assess the accountability of the district assembly member through our household survey, and we measure their activity level through a survey of the district assembly members themselves. And we assess local government investment in local projects through a community survey.
Are you doing these measurements straight away? I would imagine there's always a lot of energy in these projects right at the beginning. Or are you measuring later to work out the persistence, whether that energy is retained?
Yeah. So participatory development projects are often thought about as longer term projects compared to other types of aid, both in that it could take a while for benefits to manifest, if it takes a while for new people to be brought into the decision making process and influence outcomes. But also their benefits are hoped to be more sustainable over time insofar as they involve community members and implementation and oversight. So in order to measure a longer term outcomes, we waited 5 years.
5 years. So what did you find?
We find that the participatory development program did, on some measures, increase participation in and improve accountability of leadership in pre-existing institutions. But even though this might seem promising, it did not result in increased investment in public goods through these institutions. Mm. And so, in fact, it actually reduced household contributions to other public goods within the community. So the participatory development project crowded out household contributions to other public goods.
Oh, did you establish whether the good effects were also politically neutral? Did they favor supporters of one political party or another?
So we find that individuals aligned with the national incumbent party were more likely to be politically mobilized by the participatory development project. So they subsequently increased their participation in the local community and they ran for local government at higher rates. But this did not result in increased investment in public goods that benefited them. It actually reduced their own contributions to public goods outside the participatory development project, and perhaps also local government investment in their communities. So ultimately, these households that were aligned with the national incumbent party were socioeconomically worse off as a result of the programming. And our interpretation is that incumbent party supporters were over-mobilized into participatory development. They diverted effort into a project that did not ultimately meet expectations in generating socioeconomic improvements, either through the direct provision of public goods through the project or indirectly via improved engagement with existing governance structures.
So So, Kate, it sounds like there is some good and some bad here. Can we call this a success?
I mean, insofar as the main goal of the program was to improve socioeconomic outcomes, I think we have to say that the program was not a success. The programming Right. did not result in aggregate improvement in socioeconomic outcomes.
Okay. And was there some kind of redistribution of resources here? Because that would seem to be one of the goals of participatory development, isn't it? To make sure that resources are distributed where they're most needed.
Yeah, so what we find here is that the programming decreased the socioeconomic well-being of households aligned with Ghana's ruling party at the time, but Right. resulted in no change in the socioeconomic well-being of other households. So there are distributive consequences. It's coming at the harm of one group.
If you were going to make a positive case for this project, what would you say that was?
So the program was effective in increasing political participation among co-partisans of the government. And insofar as many participatory development projects do not manage to generate skills that translate into other realms, this is a noteworthy achievement.
Mm-hmm. What about the unexpected negative consequences?
Yeah, so interestingly, despite co-partisans of the incumbent party increasing their political participation as a result of the programming, they were not able to translate this increased participation into more public investment in their communities or better socioeconomic outcomes. The programming ultimately made incumbent co-partisans worse off. Improved engagement with local government and with district assembly members in particular was relatively ineffective in improving local investment. By spending more time engaging with relatively powerless local authorities, these citizens may have been displacing effort from activities that would have been more productive in advancing their well-being.
Oof. Given these outcomes and given those unexpected consequences, I would imagine that this was the sort of intervention, the sort of project that would take quite a lot of time and quite a lot of organizing. Could that effort have been used better to get to the results that we all want from this aid?
Yeah, I think in the case of this project, we can conclude that the time spent in participatory engagement could have been better used insofar as the main goal was improving socioeconomic outcomes. So individuals displaced time and resources into a project that appears to have been less effective than alternatives in achieving these outcomes.
But everyone wanted to do the best they could in it. So what do we learn about how to implement these programs that could be used in other projects in the future or in other places?
This study was conducted in one particular context, and without conducting additional studies in other contexts, we can't know whether the results will be the same there. One of the key takeaways of the framework we develop in this paper is that contextual factors are likely to matter a lot in determining the distributive outcomes of participatory development. So the outcomes of these projects are influenced not only by initial allocation decisions made by NGOs, but also by decisions made by citizens and governments about how to distribute time and resources across various undertakings and projects with varying levels of efficacy in addressing critical socioeconomic problems. We don't expect political insiders will always lose out from participatory development, but even in circumstances in which NGOs initially allocate participatory aid neutrally, a neutral benefit realization is an exceptional outcome rather than a guaranteed one.
Mm-hmm. Kate, thank you very much for explaining that. And it just goes to show that if everyone wants a good outcome and you do the things that you think are going to produce that, well, it doesn't always work out that way, but we can learn a lot from it. So thank you for talking about it today.
Thank you so much, Tim.
The paper is called How Political Insiders Lose Out When International Aid Underperforms, Evidence from a Participatory Development Experiment in Ghana. Authors Kate Baldwin, Dean Carlin, Chris Udry, and Ernest Appiah. It is published in World Development 169 September 2023. That means it's being published right about now, Kate.
Printed at this moment, hopefully.
Congratulations. This has been a Vox Dev Talk. The best way to make sure you don't miss an episode is to subscribe. Wherever you get your podcasts, you will find us there. And our past episodes, as always, are at voxdev.org, where you will also find articles about the papers we feature.